Hi, so my name is Julia Kaplan. I lead California's State Health and All Policies Task Force, and it's really a tremendous privilege for me to moderate this panel. Our work in California has relied heavily on learning from the experiences of people internationally who are doing health and all policies, many of whom have far more experience doing this work than anybody in the United States. The four people on this panel are global leaders in this work, and it's really wonderful that they were all willing to travel all the way here to Chicago to share their experiences. By now, you've surely heard a lot about health and all policies through the conference, and I see many familiar faces in the room, so I know that many of you are very deeply involved in health and all policies. There are quite a few definitions of this work out there. This is the one that we've been using in our California work. There are others. I think the key pieces for today are around really the idea of joining forces across government sectors to benefit the common social good, and embedding, so figuring out how to take the values of health, equity, sustainability, and really embed those into the everyday functions of government. I'm not going to go through a history of health and all policies, but I wanted to include the slides to illustrate the breadth and depth of work that has happened internationally. And for many of us doing this work in the United States, we often don't hear these stories, but there's quite a lot out there, quite a lot of resources and thinking and practice of this work. The U.S. has, a very individualistic culture, and it makes it challenging for us to advance issues related to social determinants of health, and there's quite a lot that we can learn. So, we're very fortunate to have this incredible set of international experts here. These are people who have firsthand experience leading this work. Some of them will share stories about the politics of their initiatives. Others will speak more directly to the application of a health lens in non-health, quote-unquote, non-health policies. I hope that all of us can gain new information and inspiration from their stories. I'm going to introduce each of our speakers. I've asked them to provide a brief overview of how their health and all policies work got started in their country or their region, and they'll also share one or two examples from their intersectoral collaborative work. And they'll also share some information about some of the challenges they've faced and lessons learned along the way, and our plan is to have time at the end for questions and discussion. So I will, each of our presenters has quite lengthy bios, so I'm not going to read their entire bios, but I've pulled out some key pieces that I want to share as I introduce them. Dr. Eva Olila is the Chief Medical Officer of Health Promotion in the Cancer Society of Finland. She has a long history in health policy making, both as a researcher and as a civil servant in the Ministry of Social Affairs and Health, as well as the World Health Organization and the European Commission. And Dr. Olila led the work to develop the Health and All Policies theme for the Finnish presidency of the European Union in 2006. And she's developed Health and All Policies implementation strategies and strategies for intersectoral action for the Ministry of Social Affairs and Health and now for the Cancer Society of Finland. Dr. Sebastian Pena spent time working on health and all policies in Finland and then returned to his native Chile, where he founded and leads Sano Santiago, which is a multi-sector health and all policies initiative to tackle non-communicable disease for Santiago, Chile. And through this program, Dr. Pena has built up a team of over 20 people working across sectors to promote an all-of-government approach to health, including several staff that are placed in non-health agencies and NGOs. And Drs. Olila and Pena edited a very important book in 2013 called Health in All Policies, Seizing Opportunities, Implementing Policies. This was developed as part of the WHO AIDS Global Conference on Health Promotion in 2013. And here is a copy of the book. They have some copies up here, so if this is something that you're dying to have, you should come up afterwards and get yourself a copy. I have it, and it's a tremendous resource. Dr. Norbert Forster is Deputy Permanent Secretary in Namibia's Ministry of Health and Social Services, and he leads a National Partnership Steering Committee on HIV/AIDS, tuberculosis, and maternal and child health. Dr. Forster is Namibia's alternate member of the Executive Board of the World Health Organization. He stewarded the national response to the HIV/AIDS epidemic, which has included a health and all policies initiative that's involved diverse sectors bridging labor, education, agriculture, and gender equality. And Dr. Chunruchai Kanchanachitra is an associate professor at the Institute for Population and Social Research at Mahidol University in Thailand. She was president of the National Health Assembly in 2010 and 2011, and is a member of the National Health Committee chaired by the Prime Minister. Dr. Kanchanachitra will discuss Thailand's Health Impact Assessment, or HIA, program, which was codified in 2007 through the National Consultation, through the National Constitution, which is quite a big deal, and the National Health Act. And through this program, residents may request and participate in health impact assessments of any laws that impact health. Pull up the slide again with our presenter's name. And thank you so much to each of you. I took lots of notes during each of the presentations. I have a list of about 10 questions that I want to ask, but I really want to invite all of you to think about questions that you have for our presenters, key themes that you were hearing throughout, things that left you wondering, or pieces of information that you didn't get that you'd like to hear. So. Let me see a show of hands. Is there anybody who'd like to ask a question of any of our presenters? Yes, and can you please speak very loudly?
Yes, I
thank you. And why don't you introduce yourself to yourself?
I'm Pedro. I'm from Arizona. And I have a question just in general. So we hear a lot about different projects that are going on in other countries. I'm just sort of curious why there isn't more collaboration between projects that have similar or even often exactly the same goals.
In different countries in the U.S. or between other countries between the other regions, more about collaborative efforts. Okay, just one of you want to respond? Yeah, I think it depends on the matter. It's not my personal, like, if I was correct, rather close to what happens, for instance, in putting health into the trade agreement. There's a lot of qualitative effort. The experts from different countries say they have a network and they identify the health points that, and then they discuss in their different countries. I think in those matters there is a lot of collaboration. When you talk more about the project level, I think there may be, negative, more learning from each other, but then at the same time, they are very common statistics. So, someone else could probably speak more to that more project level work.
Yeah, thanks. I think we need to appreciate, obviously, that here, what we talk about here, the exchange is going on around that. Even though, as I said, it's a relatively old concept coming out of the 60s, etc., it has not been terribly sexy, let's call it that. Right? It has had challenges. It is notoriously difficult. It requires skill sets that traditionally most people in sectors not necessarily have. And so I think we're in an exciting phase now where HIAP has come onto the agenda. Your meeting here has put it up again, and that really creates the platform for the exchange that we hope to gain. But there's still a lot of even conceptual work related to here that I feel needs to be clarified further. So there is that fuzziness around it as well.
I think there's a slow movement that is actually growing. I feel that in my country that the health and mental health has been the theme quite consistently from the 90s I came back. It mentions everywhere and it's an aspiration I think that most people in the ministry have. They invited us as a municipality to tell about our work quite for many years trying to think how can we do this. We want to, it's important, but municipalities or the other regions or other ministries don't seem to be picking up so easily. So I think this kind of, it's a movement that sort of starts growing, and I think this is an important step in bringing together different people, and I think it's a showcase that we're actually beginning to establish some collaborative networks. We invited both Norbert and Junotai and part of the Thai people in the ministry to be part of the book. También also as a part of with an idea behind to start building a community that is working globally in this kind of issue.
Implementing hearing obviously has different approach, and we can learn from each other. And you know, implementing these hearing obviously is really with the issues that are difficult. We need to have a lot of support and collaboration. For the National Assembly, we have collaboration with the other two countries, Brazil and Uganda. Brazil also has the National Assembly in that one country as well. So we learn from each other the process and mechanism of the three countries that they use the term national head assembly to learn from each other and take the strength and weakness and from other countries to help implement our assembly in Thailand, because Thailand just started in 2007, it is quite new. We have a lot of things to do and to change and to adjust to make the system more sustainable. So we are very welcome and want to learn from other countries to help improve the mechanism and the system in our country.
Thank you. And I wanted to just make a quick comment as a practitioner within the U.S. I have discovered that there is quite a lot more collaboration between countries outside of the U.S. And within the U.S., we tend to be pretty isolated globally. It's been really tremendous for me and for our whole team to begin to have more contact with people in other countries who we can partner with and learn from. So I am hoping that this panel is part of a process of shifting that. So I think what I'll do is take two comments or questions at a time, and then for the panelists, you know, each of you is welcome to respond, and also you can choose which questions you respond to. So I see, we'll start with Matthew and Kaifun, and then we'll take responses to those.
So Matthew Moss from the Public Health Institute, I want to thank you and the panel for a really wonderful presentation. So one of the themes that I heard from each of you was that one of the critical factors of success is having political champions. And both those who are elected, but also those who are appointed into senior positions by all individuals. So I'm wondering if you could each speak to what steps you're taking in your countries to nurture and cultivate future champions, so that we have people coming up from, you know, lower levels of political leadership through into more senior positions, so we have a future cohort of champions, not just for health and policy specifically, but also health equity issues or climate change or whatever that might be.
Thank you. And then one more.
Thank you. Shanko, that's from St. Michael's Hospital in Toronto. So one of the other things I also saw a theme of politics in a sense. And we're thinking about why some sectors, sometimes there's gaps in collaboration. And we heard about in Thailand this implementation gap that seems to reflect a bit of a gap in maybe in politics. And I guess I wanted to hear a little bit more about why you think there has been resistance in implementing this asbestos decision, because I've heard some rationale around maybe certain sectors and industries losing profits because they're, you know, they're going to basically have to switch materials, and I also heard a little rationale that switching to these other materials would be more expensive and put a burden on the poor, which maybe reflects a bit of an ideological difference in that this is not the right policy to drive equity. What do you think really underlies the hesitancy to implement the asbestos policy? Is it about conflicts over profits, maybe jurisdictional issues, or is it about differences in ideology about how how to go about fostering the population health.
Thanks. So why don't we start with responses to the question about nurturing future champions, and then we'll come back to the question about the asbestos policy. Any of you want to start?
Okay, nurturing the, maybe I just said about the nurturing the national champion. In Thailand, as a champion of Thailand, we take quite a long time process to, it's not like a one champion. It is kind of a group of people, especially people who are involved in the process of developing the national champion. So we have like a very committed group of people from the community. And it is mentioned in the triangle that moves the mountain, that those are very active, involved in this process are those from the civil society, not from the academic, not from the policy. Because they are seeing this as an opportunity for them to use as a channel for them to propose the national policy. Whereas the government, they have their own channel, but they don't care much about this mechanism. But for civil society, they see this as an opportunity. So we use this group to be like influence to the politics, because they have to listen to the people as well. So this is the tactic we use in order to have the policy to accept. And we have to use every opportunity, like that Jeff has mentioned. It is very important thing. Not when the window of opportunity is open, we have to be ready and submit this nationally. For Thailand, on the advent thought, you mentioned about the whether this is a good policy, if this is the effect of the poor, and it's the equity issue. Actually, it's only two manufacturers who oppose this policy, because they are the ones who produce this low cost of the low time. And they use this as the excuse for them not to use, not to change. But actually, if they talk about asbestos thought, it doesn't mean that they have to change the low time of the people right away. It can have the same thing. Time for them to like the new one, and the replacement material is not that expensive, but they use it as an excuse not to implement the policy. Okay.
A really tough question about how to let me approach it in a different way, a little bit, you know, what the failures are. Because I don't know the answer to what should be done. We used to have a very comprehensive public health education in the medical schools. But now in the medical schools, they are also, I mean, there's so much more knowledge in the service provision and the technology, and so there's not such a comprehensive public health education anymore. And then on the other hand, not all doctors have been very good managers, and there's been it's all over the Western world. There has been much pressure on the management skills, according to the new public management ideology or system. And I think that we are actually getting a little bit into problems, because we have been emphasizing the management much more. I didn't put it into the presentation because of the time constraints, but in my analysis, some of the failures in the end we actually have. The process was not the total failure, but the weaknesses that we had actually came from the very high top management in our whole all ministry, who had been involved the whole time, who were very committed. But in the end of the day, I realized that they didn't really deeply cracked, and when they needed to defend strongly, they fell short. And that's why I'm just thinking that I was probably born in the wrong decade, because the old public health champions that we used to have, this ball would never have dropped. So but I just find it painful. I don't know how to do that, and where to stop to fix the problem.
Maybe one good example from the Namibian experience is supportive supervision that we've been doing, where we've had multi-sectoral teams go out from the national level to the region or to the local authority level, and have a relatively formalized process that usually takes about 3 to 4 days. And there's a clear entry where we then engage with the local policy community, so to speak. So part of those who would be in the supportive supervision team, and they tend to be up to 10 people, would be the younger professionals as well. And again, when we get into the local authority or to the regional authority level, we make sure that there is a mixed group of people who will be accompanying us. And we go at entry or at exit as part of the briefing, we make sure that we meet the political leadership within that particular session. So entering, going through the mayor or going through the regional governor, having the junior group with this overall group, I think is very, very important in terms of imparting skills. It's really about soft skills, it's about competencies, it's about training, and a lot of that training is very, very difficult to bring abroad, across in the sort of public health school setting unless you really practice it. So I think that's been one of the important entry points, and we've had some of the junior people then go for MPH studies or even leadership studies afterwards. So it's an important aspect. It needs to be continuous. It needs to be well organized. It needs to be having some very clear results, but it creates a mechanism where you cut across the silos, you cut horizontally as well as vertically across them, and you can bring along a group that they would like to do.
I think these two questions, they have some elements in common. One of them is that these political challenges that are within the health sector or outside the health sector, in Chile we have a gap, a generational gap. There is the old champions from the 50s and 70s who are now retired, most of them. And because of the dictatorship, there was a gap between all these sort of 50 or middle-aged or 50 champions that should be out there, but there are actually quite few. And there's the new generation, that is sort of my generation at around 30, that are actually tracking and getting a lot of steam, and we build a sort of a movement together to try to influence policies at the different levels where we are. I think it's really important to build a sense of that it's not you alone fighting against the system, but mostly building a community of practice that is sharing their experiences all the time, placing different positions in the universities, in civil society, in the ministry itself, trying to push for the same idea. And there comes the issue of ideology, because I think you need to have a value base that is shared within all this group of people that are pushing in different fields and in slightly different missions, but pushing towards the same direction. And then there comes the political element of also that you're sort of fighting for values and ideology in a country like Chile that has been for so long infiltrated by the after the dictatorship with a very neoliberal focus that now you talk about self-equity and people look at you as if you were the strongest communist in maybe the Chilean taste a bit the same. You go to Europe and then you hear the director of the UN talking about health equity and this kind of social justice and this kind of thing. Until you feel this kind of words taboo and you still have to find your way around. And so building a movement within a generation, having shared value base and understanding that the public health is a strong political process, I think it's important to try to move it in forward.
Great. Linda, I saw your hand, and this gentleman right here. Go ahead. And will you introduce yourself?
I'm Linda Rudolph with the Center for Climate Change and Health at the Public Health Institute. I'm wondering if Jim could speak a little bit more about what happened with this public consultation on alcohol, and if the others could address some of the tensions in trying to really have deep community stakeholder engagement and processes when many people don't really understand the social determinants of health.
Great, and we'll take your.
Yeah, I want to make sure that all the panel and audience know about a policy that was adopted yesterday by the Governing Council that would trade that would be a great help to all these people working in health and all.
Wonderful. Can you keep it very, very short?
Yes.
Like a one sentence, so people can go, maybe they can go find it on the web or something. I'm sorry, we only have about 6 minutes left for the panel. So.
CSEX is ensuring trade agreements promote public health, health and all, and trade agreements.
Great.
Adopted by the Governing Council yesterday.
And it's C6?
C6.
Okay, thank you. And Tia? Okay, great. And so now I'll give you all, those who want to respond to Linda's question, and I'm going to ask you to keep the comments pretty short because I also want to make sure you have time for some closing comments.
I think in terms of community engagement, the approach that we have taken is really problem-based. What are the problems in the communities? If we come with a concept of health or even equity, which is relatively foreign to communities, it's relatively difficult to link up. But as soon as you become problem-based, then you pick up on some of the health challenges within the community and you engage them on that and you say, well, this is something that we can work with you on, that we can advocate with certain sectors on. It starts opening up. So we've tried to obviously focusing on HIV/AIDS makes it much more specific. But I think it's still good to try and look at particular community problems and work around that, which I think to some extent is what's coming out of Sebastian's case study as well. So rather take it that way than coming with an abstract concept that people will, you know, then get into ideology, etc. That's not always.
Yeah, well, that's a story of failure, basically. But it has a context. There was a neighboring municipality who mayor decided to reduce the opening of bars and restaurants and also of premises by the government. And that was done by a decision in the municipal council. And it created a lot of resistance from the basically all the retailers decided to go to the municipal office, and there was a protest. Tigran also campaigned with some of them because they were left-wing oriented, so then they were offering their place so that they can campaign, and then they felt that they were being betrayed. After all this resistance, the press took a very negative attitude towards this regulation of opening times of alcohol out. And this kind of conversation happened more or less at the same time. I think the communities deal when you discuss with them, they feel that the alcohol is a problem, but they associate mostly that the solutions would be have more education and to have people understanding a bit more how they should drink alcohol more responsibly. And I think it's because they're being exposed to a whole lot of messages that are coming both from the industry and also from the kind of individual mindset that is in our society. So as we took out 45%, I think it's tells us a bit about that. We even analyzed different neighborhoods to see if there were some neighborhoods where we got more than 50%, so we can issue some more restrictive regulations, but none of the neighborhoods had more than 50%. So we have to stop there. And now we are in the process of building this awareness with the community so that they understand a bit more that some of the alcohol-related harm associated basically with public safety, it's related to alcohol, that they cannot make that connection yet. And also building this idea of what are the most cost effective policies. So it takes a bit of work to go and discuss with them and have a sort of practical discussion because they also have very valid points of view on, and also discuss with the retailers. It's an active work as a thing. It takes a lot of negotiation and discussing, but I think it's eventually, at least in this version, we have started to make something forward.
Thank you. Did either Eva or Chinrich, I want to say anything about the community engagement in your process?
I think
The community engagement is very crucial for international health sector, and this basic project is really empowering people at the community level. It's not just the policy agenda at the national level that participate in this project, but they learn from this project and go back to the community and use this mechanism to develop their local policy as well. So at this moment, we have more than 100 village level that use this mechanism to develop the process of the policy at the village level using participation and evidence-based policy. So this mechanism is very good for empowering people to be active citizens.
Great, thank you.
I was mostly talking now about the national level policy making. It's much more, there's much more community engagement in the municipal level. In the national level, it's mostly, in Finland, it's always a very broad consultation process. It's mostly NGOs and different kind of stakeholders and constituencies. There's an open possibility, I mean, through internet, for every citizen nowadays to give their opinion. That's the process. It's more on the NGO level rather than the community engagement level. Mm-hmm.
Great. So I wish that we had another hour to have a round table and keep the conversation going. We're almost out of time. I would like to give each of you just about 30 seconds to say any closing thoughts, advice for those of us in the room, anything that you are hoping will happen in the future, just whatever you'd like to leave us with.
For my experience working in this area, I found that the most important element for the health policy to be functional is to have trust on each other. For the different sections to work with us together, if they have no trust and they try to get the benefits as much as possible or competing priority, it will be very difficult. So we have to have the forum to build trust among members to participate, and this can make gradually to move forward.
Maybe I just like it's a long-term process and you need to have a lot of perseverance. There will be good times and harder times, and you just have to take the opportunities that each time offer you, because in each time you can always do something. And from the priority setting point of view, I think it's important to think about your priorities very carefully. What are the most important things? What are the things that you can easily do, and make a balance between those so that, you can, just like Norbert says, that you can't do everything at the same time. Keep your values straight.
Yeah, I think the aspirational aspect is so important. See here as an aspiration where we move towards a process where we would have help in all policies eventually, but realize that the process that you have to follow is going to be a long one. And I think that links to the issue of grooming another generation. You actually need to do that because sometimes your time horizon is 10 years, 15 years, that's my experience. And many of us may not be around at that stage. So if you have somebody who can, so to speak, carry the candle forward and keep hammering on certain issues or keeping certain things alive is very important.
Well, in light of our experience, I think the main point is that self-control is possible. We need to value our contribution as public health to the other departments. Sometimes we tend to think that we don't know enough or we're not useful enough. But at the same time, value the other expertise. And I think we have learned a lot from the other departments. Many of them, they don't call it wealth, but they have a thing, a shared value base. So respect also the contribution that other sectors can do. I think it's also important.
Wonderful. Thank you so much to the panelists.